Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Welcome to Travolting, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Look Who's Talking To. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Stuart. How are you doing today?
You know, I am coming from a fantastic recording session of Chains of Gold, man. You remember how amazing that episode was?
Yeah, that was a great episode.
We just talked about so many amazing things, and I look forward to our audience. Like, you know, the episode should already be out by the time this episode comes out, obviously, because it's before this. But we are talking right after the recording of that one. We haven't put any SD cards in the computer yet, and I just feel like we had like 2 hours worth of gold.
Yeah, that was a good episode. Thank you folks for listening last week to Chains of Gold.
Yeah.
Hope you had a good time listening to that episode. We think it's one of our best.
Yeah. What was your favorite thing about that episode that we talked about, Jeff?
I mean, in pure humor, like I enjoyed my Batman rant. But in terms of the longer form, I think we had a, like, because the movie wasn't like super interesting, but I thought we had a really good digression into discussing like how Travolta's like personal life and his like...
Yeah.
Career kind of intersect.
It's interesting, especially when you consider all the Scientology elements involved in Chains of Gold, which is something that I was not expecting at all.
Yeah. I mean, for these movies, you know, Mary Grace introduced us to that idea.
Yeah. But now we're starting to tie all the threads.
Yeah.
You think we could go back to all our other previous episodes and find more Scientology threads we might have missed?
I don't necessarily think so. I don't think Travolta was at a place where he had the ability to kind of wedge that into his work yet.
Mm-hmm.
As he does with these movies and you know Battlefield Earth in the future and some other movies.
Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to like all the future episodes where it gets even more in depth, and I think we're probably going to talk about that, especially during this episode on Look Who's Talking too, given all the elements that we learned Scientology wise with the first Look Who's Talking movie.
You ever just think about how Mary Grace just came onto this podcast,
dropped
a bomb, and still picking up the wreckage?
She had no right. No fucking right. I was broken. I am broken. I have not quite recovered from that. I have no words.
It was an amazing moment.
Can you put your phone on like the dresser so it doesn't vibrate the table?
I put it on Do Not Disturb.
And it's still vibrating.
It's done. It's done.
Okay. You might put it on airplane mode or something.
I just did. That's what I did.
Okay, cool. Cool. Thank you. So Look Who's Talking To. They made a second one of these. By the way, I've said this in our last episode, but we can officially welcome our audience to 1990s Travolta.
We can officially welcome you to the 90s. That's right, 90s, baby. We're in the age of George H.W. Bush.
Yep.
Bill Clinton. Runaway capitalism.
Oh my gosh. NAFTA.
Richie Rich.
Oh, Backstreet Boys.
NSYNC. Britney Spears.
Justin Timberlake.
Only real 90s kids know.
Only real... What year were you born, Jeff? Should you digress to the audience how old you are?
1972. I was actually born in the midst of the Richard Nixon scandals.
That's interesting, because I was born in 1974.
Wow, I'm older.
You are older.
But no, I'm a late 90s kid.
So you were born in 97? Or 96. I was born in 95. So
old,
like,
you're old as shit.
I am old as fuck. So like, let's have this discussion. 90s kids versus 90s babies. You and I were 90s babies. We weren't necessarily 90s kids.
Yes.
We were early 2000s kids, but we were 90s babies. Yes. So like, cause when I this took me a while for me to stomach, because, you know, as like somebody who prides himself on being a millennial, you like to kind of say, like, go with the older crowd and be like, yeah, I'm a 90s kid too. I remember dial up. I remember all this stuff. But in actuality, like, my earlier childhood memories were like early 2000s. So like,
I generally agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So like being a 90s kid versus a 90s baby, I feel like even though we hear a lot about the purple, green, white, yellow color scheme jackets and why was everything purple, green, yellow, and white?
I have no idea. It was like pleasing color. It was probably some market research shit.
It had to be. So, because everything, clothing, from food, everything was like colored that way. And so, like, I remember being told about that, and there were still remnants of that in the early 2000s, but I didn't live it.
Yeah.
I didn't live it.
The 90s was I wasn't living through it, so I can't say certainty, but to my knowledge, the 90s were a very weird time culturally.
Yes.
Very weird time culturally. This movie is very representative of 90s kind of consumerist culture.
Yeah.
And all that fun stuff.
Yeah. And this movie doesn't really have
have any points.
This movie doesn't really have any commentary on the changing cultural aspect of society.
We will have some movies that are very 90s coming up. And we'll have more of this discussion then, and how Travolta's career is kind of shifting with the times, just as it had before, where he's part of the new Hollywood movement of the 70s, kind of settled into the studio system, churning like 0 out of 10 comedies of the 80s.
Yeah.
Moving into the 90s, where he kind of repositions himself as an indie darling into some of the major hits of the late 90s.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, he's invested in these weird 90s like knockoff movies.
Family stuff, right?
Yeah, like Chains of Gold, which was...
not a family movie.
Kind of a knockoff, like cheap action movie of the 90s. Like, it has all the aesthetic qualities of a 90s action movie.
Of a broken LA cop who has to go undercover for a drug ring.
Yeah, and
has to replace undercover cop with an undercover social worker.
Yeah, and it has like a lot of, you know, the synth score and
we talked 2 hours about it. I don't think
we talked about 2 hours with Chains of Gold, and a lot of like the helicopter shots of cityscapes.
Yeah. You mentioned the synthesizer stuff too.
But it wasn't like a super successful version of that thing. These are very evocative of like the family comedies that came about in the early 90s.
Yeah. And this is a continuation off of Look Who's Talking, the first movie. Yes,
it came out 1 year after the first one.
And I said this after our first recording of Look Who's Talking. It's like they had to like green light this the second it was released, if not before it was released. Because we heard about that, right?
Yeah.
Like, wasn't Rian Johnson greenlit for 3 more Star Wars movies before Last Jedi was released?
I mean, he wasn't greenlit. He was hired to develop a trilogy.
So, like...
That happens a lot in Hollywood, where they'll hire you to develop a movie in advance, because they just want... they want to play their cards simple.
Okay.
What this was, and according to Amy Heckling herself, the director of both this and the first one, she said in an interview in 2016 with The Current, which is a Criterion Collection publication.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she had a movie that was in the Criterion Collection, so she was talking with them about it.
Yeah.
She mentioned that she was sort of forced into doing this for legal reasons.
Really?
Yeah, she said she did not really have passion for this movie. It was not a fun experience for her. The story was told with the first one. She was forced into this by the studio.
But you know what's different about it?
What?
There's another baby.
Yes.
And this one has another voice.
I think you can tell her lack of passion in this one.
Yes.
Because the first one, while not like a great movie by any means, has a plot.
Kind of.
It has an idea.
Yeah.
It
has a gimmick.
It's pretty well directed.
Yeah, like the acting wasn't the bad part about
it. Yeah, the acting wasn't bad. I kind of enjoyed the shot structure and the construction of the scenes and whatnot.
Yeah.
This one is like 75 minutes long.
Yeah, it is really short.
Has absolutely no plot.
So you watched it today, right?
I watched it this morning.
It felt fast to you, right?
Yes, it went by extremely fast.
Yeah, like I felt like it was a very
I literally watched this whole movie before I ate breakfast.
Yeah.
That is how quickly it went by.
And
I was able to make breakfast in early morning and still watch this beforehand.
How early were you up this morning?
I started watching this like 8:30. I was done by 10.
Why were you up this early?
I get up at 8 every morning.
Fucking poser. Why?
I want to have a full day.
All right, well, I'm clearly a lazy fuck because I sleep into like noon every day. Although I was up at like 5 this morning, but I went on a photo shoot at sunrise.
I was really hoping you were about to say I was up at 5 so I could watch this movie 6 times.
no, I would not voluntarily watch this movie six times.
Yeah.
No.
But no, she was forced into this movie. Mm-hmm. Her lack of passion shows in the movie. And this is not a discredit to her. She openly admits she did not want to do this.
Was John Travolta and
Kirstie Alley?
Kirstie Alley forced into this as well?
I don't believe so.
Were they more like enthusiastic about doing this?
I could not find like specific like post-mortem quote comments from them.
Right.
I think very much Travolta had not had a hit in 10 years.
And this was the like a surefire in his
eyes. The first one of these was his first hit.
Yeah.
And so he was probably extremely into, you know, doing another one, another guaranteed hit for him.
Yeah.
Kirstie Alley, probably in the same boat. She wasn't like a failing actress by any means, but
yeah,
she had TV. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's great to have a consistent comedy franchise in Hollywood. It's a great way to stay relevant, good way to rake in residuals.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the both of them were very happy to turn the successful movie they did into a franchise.
Successful in air quotes. Yes.
Unfortunately, Amy Heckling was not excited to be along for the ride.
Which, as we said before, I think you're absolutely right. You can easily tell she's not excited about doing this.
Because the studio, like, this came out a year after the first one.
I guess so they had to green
this. Came this out and they're right like, all right, you start shooting in 3 months. Write a script.
It's literally like a copy and paste from the first one, but just one more baby.
Yes.
Literally. And,
I mean, I guess we can just start going through the movie.
Yeah, I mean, because there's not much more relevance in terms of how it affects John Travolta's career, especially in the long 2-hour tangent from Chains of Gold that we had.
Yeah, it's but, just it's just and him sticking to something that's going to keep him afloat.
Yeah.
And eventually this does float him to mainstream success again.
Yeah.
Critical mainstream success. This is a commercial mainstream success. Right.
I just want to start off, if that's okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because the first thing I wrote down is, we begin in the uterus again.
Yes.
Dot, dot,
dot. It's another fallopian tube opening.
Yes.
Or as the experts call it, the fallopening.
This is
the only trilogy of fallopening movies.
Fallopening?
Yes.
There's
another movie that has a full opening. The Naked Gun, I think 33 and a third? One of the three Naked Gun movies also starts within the uterus and has a full opening.
Full opening.
Yeah, the fallopian tube opening, the full opening. I'm going to make a letterbox list called the full openings.
Full openings.
And share it on our Twitter and Instagram accounts the day this comes out.
I am not associated with this list.
Yeah, the full openings.
I don't know why
three
you
three of
know
these movies and
the amount naked. Of.
Well, I've only seen three, so I assume
there's probably more. Jeff, are you going to do a lot of research as to what movies start in the fallopian
tubes?
No,
I'm going
to
put the three of these and Naked Gun, whichever one it is, into the list and then hope I never have to look at that list again.
Well, and then you're going to get comments and Twitter threads of people saying, well, what about this movie that starts in the fallopian tube? What about this movie? Like, you're going to find out that there's like thousands of movies that start in the uterus.
Because people are
broken. But we start in the uterus
Hollywood
again.
Hollywood is a terrible place.
Hollywood is a terrible
Why
place.
Why did we decide to work in it?
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
We love our jobs.
Yeah, we do love our jobs.
That we don't have.
No, we have jobs.
Because we're both unemployed filmmakers still.
Oh, I'm sorry. Remember when we started the first step, we've already talked about this.
Yeah, Chains of Gold.
Yeah, we talked about this in Chains of Gold.
So, uterus.
Yeah, uterus.
This one is just like in the first one, not the impregnation scene, but the egg drop.
The egg drop. And it has a female. It doesn't have Roseanne's voice.
It's a different voice. Yeah.
That's just kind of like, I'm an egg.
That's the gag.
Literally the joke.
That's the gag.
And then we zoom out of the uterus.
In the first movie, when they tease the second movie with the baby girl, it was a different voice than Roseanne Barr.
It was Joan Rivers.
Joan Rivers. What happened? Joan Rivers would have done a much better job.
Apparently, had some form of like contract difficulty or like scheduling difficulty.
She had to do Spaceballs with Mel Brooks.
That was before this.
It was before this.
Yes. But
Mel Brooks is in this movie.
He is in this movie.
And we'll talk about what role he plays later, but he's a great cameo.
Mel Brooks is in this movie.
What if Mel Gibson was?
Yeah, Mel Gibson just walks in and he's like, it's a baby.
It talks. Where's my family?
I would see the shit out of a movie where Mel Gibson voices a baby.
Oh my god.
It would probably be the worst move, like, in terms of subject matter.
Well, there's already Alec Baldwin voicing a baby. There's
the boss baby.
The boss baby.
The movie that begs the question, what if a baby was a boss?
It'd be a boss baby, voiced by Alec Baldwin.
Like, the concept for boss baby has to have just been, like, it has to have just been, what if this, like, you don't come to that concept unless Alec Baldwin's going to voice the baby, right?
I imagine you probably, like, have some other, like, ideas.
Literally the whole bit is him doing the ABC thing from
Glengarry Glen Ross.
Except it's ABC because it's a baby. That's the whole conception for that movie.
Well, do you think, like, they wrote those in when they got Alec Baldwin?
No, there's no way you're coming up with a movie called The Boss Baby.
And you have anyone else in mind?
Besides Alec Baldwin.
What if it,
like,
was...
what are you going to do? I have Al Pacino. I'm the boss, baby.
What if it was, like, Robert De Niro? Or, like, I don't know.
I'm the boss, baby.
What if it was, like, a very well-known, renowned A-list actor, like Leonardo DiCaprio or Meryl Streep?
That would have been crazy. But no, the boss baby has to have just been someone was watching that movie. It's like, what if this was a baby?
I say that, and yet Patrick Stewart does play the shit emoji in the emoji movie. Yes. So anything is possible.
I mean, when it comes, I mean, a lot of actors will just be like, yeah, these, like, non-Disney, non-DreamWorks animated movies.
Yeah.
You show up for a day talking to a microphone, $1 million shows up at your doorstep 2 weeks later. What's not to love?
What's not to love? So who was the voice of the egg, not the baby, in this?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
It also wasn't Joan Rivers.
It was not Joan Rivers. She is not in this movie for whatever that reason is.
Unfortunately.
I can't find, let me try and see if I can find voice of egg.
Are you just looking for the cast list of egg?
I cannot find any evidence of voice of egg.
Voice of egg or zygote or... cell.
Yeah, nothing of the sort.
Potential fetus.
Yeah, I can't find anything of that. It might have been Roseanne just doing a voice. Who knows?
That's true. That's true. I guess that's probably right. But wouldn't you credit them as a different name?
Yes.
Because it's not Julie.
I mean, it technically is Julie.
Is it though?
It technically would be.
I mean, like, because it doesn't become Julie until the sperm comes in. And wiggles its way in there and gets all snuggled up next to the egg.
This is a whole conversation about when is conception that I don't think I want to have on this podcast.
We're going to have it on White Man's Burden podcast. No. We're going to get all the political stuff out of the way.
Yeah, we're just going to get all White Man's one Burden. Episode.
All out, I think we should.
Yeah.
I honestly think we should. I mean, everybody knows my politics. It's fuck White Castle. It's my politics right there. Mm-hmm. So I bet Roseanne Barr eats at White Castle.
She probably does.
Fuck you, Roseanne
Barr. We're going to have to talk about Roseanne in this episode a little bit.
We are going to have to talk about Roseanne.
Yeah.
This is pre-racist Twitter Roseanne.
Isn't it also really funny that Roseanne is still a show that exists, but without they killed off
Roseanne? Well, they call it the Connors now, right?
It's so funny to me they killed Roseanne off of Roseanne.
Know, like, this will maybe get a little political.
This is like,
this if, might get a little
this
political.
Is like if in the last season of Friends they all, like, got into a fight and stopped being friends and they made us like another season of it, but
it was about
called,
what's it called
enemies.
Well, I was just thinking, like, who was the the barista's name in the coffee shop at Friends?
I can't remember.
Like Duncan or something like that. And that name's not Duncan. It's like, it starts with a D, I'm pretty sure. Like, what if it was called, they kept the name Friends, but it was just about that dude.
Yeah. That's the equivalent of what they did to the Roseanne show, which
or
is funny.
Paul Rudd, the Paul Rudd character in Friends.
He's in that, isn't he?
He is in that. He plays a pretty big role in that. Yeah. People forget Paul Rudd was in the Friends. But no, to my point about the Connors and all that stuff, I'm glad they did that because, Jeff, you and I work in the film industry.
Yes.
You work on a couple prominent shows. I work on a couple prominent shows. And these are reliable paychecks for us. Would it be awful if, like, the lead actor said something racist and you lost your job?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So rather than send everybody to unemployment, just rewrite the show, kill off the character, fire the racist person, but keep the show going so people can stay employed and we just, you know, have non-racist actors.
Do you know how they killed off Roseanne in the show?
No, I don't.
Okay. So
I didn't watch the show in the first place.
I have never seen an episode of Roseanne, but I find this all very funny. Mm-hmm. in the last episode of the last season of Roseanne proper,
mm-hmm.
it's revealed that Roseanne has a prescription drug addiction.
Oh, God, no.
And like, the idea was the season after that would continue to acknowledge, like, her prescription drug addiction and how... And it was going to, like, you know, dig into how a lot of America has, like, older America has a prescription drug addiction. Because Roseanne, for all of her faults, the show would always tackle some topics that weren't particularly covered in sitcom territory.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she said some things.
She said some things.
She supported a certain president.
Yep.
And she dies of an overdose off screen.
She's not on the show anymore. So, yeah. And she's in this movie.
She's in this movie. She voices the baby.
She plays a baby.
Named Julie.
I wish she was, like, what if it was the Roseanne today voicing that baby?
Yeah. I'm Roseanne.
Trump 2020.
I'll say good. If you ever watched her sing the national anthem at a baseball game, it's very funny. Oh, anyway, God. Let's get back to the movie.
Oh, yeah. There's a movie here. We're talking about Look Who's Talking To.
Look Who's Talking To. After the full opening, we're out and Mikey is... We're checking in with our old friend Mikey, voiced by Bruce Willis.
Voiced by Bruce Willis.
Who can now kind of talk.
Okay, this was my issue
you can
with
say
the
words.
First movie, is that this kid can talk, and yet Bruce Willis still has a place in this boy's head.
Because
he's
it's a past lives
of
L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard.
It's the past lives are in his head talking. This is what we established. So this
does he hear these past lives talking to him?
I think, like we said last week, it's like a subconscious thing.
So Mikey can't hear the Bruce Willis voice.
It's like the Freud stuff of, like, you know, the super ego and the id and all that. This is like the deep, Bruce Willis is the deep down, like, subconscious that Mikey doesn't realize is informing him, but does.
And we as the audience can hear it.
It's the past lives trying to break through and become whole in this person.
It's just weird that he can, like, talk.
Yeah, talk to other babies.
And not just talk to other babies, but it can also talk in real life.
Yes.
So it opens the door for a lot of questions for me, Jeff.
Yeah. At the beginning of this movie, because, you know, after we check in with Mikey, he starts having visions of monsters in his bedroom.
It's the visions, man.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
That was when I was like, wait, is this movie actually going to be good? Is this going to be like just live action Rugrats?
Maybe.
It very quickly does not become that.
No.
But I was like, if this was just live action Rugrats, I'd kind of be into it.
And also, at the same time, what's happening is John Travolta and Kirstie Alley are trying to get down.
Yes, they're trying to have another baby.
Get down with the sickness. Are they trying to have another baby? Because doesn't she... No, she puts in a diaphragm.
No, I'm pretty sure they say they were trying to have another baby.
She puts in a diaphragm, bro.
Whatever.
Because there's a whole bit where all the sperm, like, bounces off the diaphragm.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Like,
what
is this? We can't get in.
And one of them finds a way through.
Sperm wiggles in because, you know, diaphragms aren't 100% effective.
Yeah.
Which is, like, you know, not to mention that, like, why wasn't John Travolta just wearing a fucking condom?
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, fuck women, I guess.
Yeah, that's expected for them to go the extra mile.
Not to get political again, but did you hear the story about how they had, like, male birth control, but they stopped because men got too emotional on the test trials?
God, why do we suck?
Why do we suck?
But, you know, Mikey has monster visions while they're, like, getting down.
Getting down with the sickness.
And they successfully, an egg is successfully impregnated.
Well, unsuccessfully... Do not avoid pregnancy.
Yeah, well, it's successfully pregnant.
Yeah.
And then it just starts talking with Roseanne's voice.
Yeah, and then the sperm all, you know, I've never enjoyed the whole sperm wiggling into the egg thing because it shows like a crack in the egg.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like the sperm is penetrating the egg.
It's weird because...
And there's voices.
It's entirely structured. The two actors voicing the egg and the sperm voice it like a rape scene.
Yes.
It's very...
Yes! That's what I was just going to say.
It's
because they're
kind
screaming.
Of disturbing to watch.
They're screaming, like the egg is like screaming and the guy sperm is like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she's like, no, stop, leave me alone.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
I got uncomfortable.
Really fucking weird.
Yeah.
So. But the egg is
back to our family friendly movie.
Back to the family friendly movie. There's like opening credits or something next.
Yeah. So John Travolta in this movie is still a cab driver. Molly is still
James Ubriaco.
Kirstie Alley is still an accountant. And the first, this is where we get to like the first very thin plot of this movie, yes. Which is Molly makes the money
and John Travolta does not.
And that is like if anybody in our audience thinks we're going to talk another 40 minutes about much more detailed, complex plot, I'm going to let you know now that that is it.
That is the extent of the plot.
That is the extent of the plot.
They get into a fight and that is the movie.
Yep.
Like I said, this movie is 75 minutes long.
Yep.
Absurdly short, which I'm glad for because I did not want to watch more of it.
Yeah.
But
that's the plot, is John Travolta doesn't make money. Kirstie Alley does. John Travolta's upset about it. Kirstie Alley, I guess. And also the message of the film is weird. So I guess she has to be okay with him. Like, what would you, if you had to like yank out a point, a theme in this, what would it be for you? Because like I got that it's like Kirstie Alley shouldn't be mean to John Travolta about not making enough money for the family, like, or maybe John Travolta shouldn't be so upset about not making that much money. Like, if there is a point to this movie, what did you get?
This movie's trying to, and this is not at all like something that succeeds, but I think this movie's trying to be about the way that divorce messes with kids.
Yeah, that's true. Because there's all this stuff about like with Mikey and Julie, which you notice that. So in the Kirstie Alley's character name is Molly.
Yeah.
John Travolta's character name is James. Their first kid, which is not John Travolta's biological kid, but their first kid is named Mikey, which is an M name.
Yeah,
and then with Molly, and then their daughter is Julie, which is from James.
It's the Smith family approach.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's Will and Jada, and they name their kids Jaden and Willow.
Yeah.
So it's the Smith family approach.
Yeah. Yeah.
While she's pregnant, they're trying to still raise Mikey. And honestly, like, the biggest plot thread of this movie is Mikey trying to use the bathroom.
Yeah. It's him getting potty trained. That's
the main plot thread of this movie.
It's him getting potty trained.
They like buy like a toy, like a little potty for him.
That has like the classic fuzzy fur toilet top.
And he's like not into it.
He's not into it.
And so they start like dancing and singing. And there's this weird moment where Travolta does the Beastie Boys. I was like, you got to fight for your right
to potty.
And the kid's like, we did not need this. Bruce Willis is like, this is not necessary right now.
This is what Bruce Willis is the voice of the audience at this point. Because I'm also like, why do we need this?
Yeah.
She gets pregnant fast.
Yeah, pregnant very fast. And then we kind of just skip through most of the pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like 0 to 10 babies popping out.
9 months right away.
But they tell Mikey he's going to be a big brother.
Yep.
And he's like, and he's like some vision about, you know,
what it means to be a big brother, which is another, I guess, a plot point. The kids have more development than the adults do, which is the opposite.
In spite of that, they feel more perfunctory to this movie than ever before. Like the kids have a plot thread that's actually followed through in this movie, and yet they feel so unnecessary. Like if you took out the baby voices, this movie would like,
nothing would change.
Nothing would change.
Well, and I think we said that about the last movie, too.
Yeah.
With if there was any plot points with the kids in the first movie, which I don't think there was.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if there was one, it's Mikey wanting a dad.
Yeah.
Which we talked about. That was the original title of the first movie, Daddy Wanted, which I'm like, why? You missed out on an opportunity.
Daddy Wanted.
You missed out on an opportunity on that title, boys. What studio made this? Was this
TriStar.
TriStar. Is TriStar still around?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too. TriStar, you fucked up with that title. Daddy Wanted?
Daddy Wanted 2.
Daddy Wanted 2? Bro! Daddy Wanted 2? That has so many undertones on that as well. Yeah. That's missed opportunity there, TriStar. You fucked up. There's some stuff in between the pregnancy stuff with, like, the James... Like, I think he talks with Kirstie Alley's, like, mother, and Molly's mom is, like, mean to to James about he's not working.
Yeah, he needs to get a job.
He needs to get a job, and they push for him to be like a pilot because he likes flying planes. But so they push for him to get his pilot's license.
But then Travolta's like, "Why would you put all this on me? But you don't put it on your other son, whose name is
Stewart."
How is it that we've had like four stewards and they've all been deadbeats? There's not been a good steward in the movie we've watched.
You know, it's tough being a steward. It's tough being one of the very few steward who has to live up to my name.
So Stewart straight up sucks in this movie.
He does
suck. Actually the worst person. He is of all time. 100.
He brings a gun.
Yeah, into the family home.
And you know how Kirstie Alley reacts? Well, it's not loaded.
You know, that honestly, like, all the Stewart stuff has me on Travolta's side in this movie, which I don't think I'm supposed to be.
Right.
Like, I'm like, this guy with a gun should not be around your children.
Right, yeah. Well, it's not loaded. This is also New York in the 90s, where everybody has a fucking gun, probably.
But that's also jumping a little bit ahead.
It is jumping a little bit ahead. So we kind of skim through the whole, like, John Travolta needs to get a job, and Kirstie Alley makes more money.
We skim through because there's nothing to it.
Right. It's so like then we get to, because I really want to talk about is the delivery scene.
Yes.
Because holy fuck, for a PG-13 movie, this is a pretty bloody scene.
Yeah. So yeah, the baby is coming while she's at the accounting office.
Yep. And there's a scene where like she's talking with some clients and her boss is right next to her, and we get the reprise of the demon voice
where she's like, "Ain't the guy I'm having a baby."
She's like, "Just fucking file the tax return," like something like that. Also, I noticed there are two fucks in this movie.
Yes.
And I had thought, correct me if I'm wrong, that in PG-13 rules, you have one non-sexual use of the word fuck.
You are correct, and there's actually an IMDb trivia fact about this. That's very weird.
And they use the word fuck twice.
They use two fucks.
And neither, I think, are in sexual use. Like, you can't say in a PG-13, we should fuck.
Yeah.
But you can say, this is fucking awful.
Yeah.
But you can only use it once. They have it twice in this movie, both non-sexual uses, but it's also like,
Isn't the MPAA so weird? It's like, yeah, you can only use fuck once. Because if a kid hears it once, they won't think anything of it. But if you hear it twice, oh God.
They might repeat it.
Kids are going to lose their mind.
And the first one's early in the movie. Yeah. Isn't it like the first scene?
Something like that.
I'm pretty sure it's in the first scene. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, it caught me off guard. Like, and I had to double check the rating. I'm like, did they just straight up throw out the family element in this?
Yeah.
And then the delivery scene made me also question that because
we get our old friend Don Davis, the doctor from Twin Peaks,
Don Davis,
which he looks like such a Don Davis.
Yes, he does.
But he's delivering the baby.
And so there was something where like the Julie, the baby that Roseanne Barr is voicing, has the umbilical cord tied around her neck, which is very dangerous. They play it off. It's like, oh, your baby's going to be fine. It's like, babies have died with this shit.
And Roseanne's like, I know they say life is short, but this is crazy.
This is crazy. Like, she's about to have, like,
so they have
fucking
to do
the
cesarean, and you see a lot of blood and organs.
Yes. So, like, first off, let's also acknowledge the reprise of Begin the Cesarean.
Begin the Cesarean.
From Boy in the Plastic Bubble. But yeah, so they do a C-section. She's not okay. I know nothing about women giving babies, but I thought if it's a C-section, like the women are like put out, not like just numbed.
Mm.
Because I was a C-section for fun folks. You're a C-section too? Hey, C-section babies.
Yeah,
we fist bumped. I maybe like mom, if you're listening to this podcast, my question is: do they put you out or do they just numb you? I thought if it's a C-section, they would put you out. You know, cesarean seems like
there's this wonderful thing
called Google
where I can just say, do they
put women under during C-sections or just numb them? Like, is it a local anesthetic or a general anesthetic? Right? That's the terminology. Local is when they numb you, general is when they put you on out, right?
They awake. You're awake and simply numb from the waist down using regional anesthesia. This way they are awake to see and hear their baby being born.
So it is medically accurate that Kirstie Alley would be awake. Okay, yes. I stand corrected.
You know, but she's having the baby. Travolta runs in the room, and he, like, passes out when he sees.
Because they have, like, blood-soaked gauze, and they're talking about, we got to move the bladder, move her organs, and all that stuff. It's a pretty bloody scene.
It's fairly graphic.
And for, again, for a PG-13 movie, I was like, oh, okay, this is family friendly for sure.
Yeah, the ultimate family friendly movie.
Remember when on the first Look Who's Talking episode, when I had a family, like a hypothetical family watching this and what this would be like?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about that same family watching this movie.
Yeah.
Because it happens quick in the beginning where all like the R-rated elements come out right away. There's a fuck in the beginning of the movie. There's bloody gauze.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Like it would, it's, the 90s were crazy, man.
The 90s were crazy. So, but,
they have the baby.
They have the baby.
They bring her home. It's Roseanne.
It's Roseanne.
Mikey's not wholly enthused.
Not wholly enthused.
Because he feels like the baby's getting all the attention, but he still wants to be a good big brother.
So you're a younger sibling, right?
I am.
I'm an older sibling. And I got to say, I was told, I was 3 years old when my brother was born. Not many memories. I was told that I liked my brother right away. But I can tell you from when I first started developing memories, I thought my little brother was a piece of shit. So like, it makes sense to me to see Mikey, like, by the way, Matthew, if you're listening to this episode, I love you, bro. We made up. We're good friends now. But yeah. Like, for most of our childhood, we hated each other.
It makes sense, like, when you're get used to being the only child, having someone else take the attention.
Exactly. Which Julie really doesn't.
Yeah.
Because
Mikey
all
still gets a fair bit of attention.
Yeah, and Julie also gets right away a babysitter.
Yeah.
Also, maternity leave is not a thing in this movie.
Apparently not.
Because she goes right back to work.
Yes.
So does John Travolta. He starts his piloting stuff.
Yes.
There are no parents in the house.
Yes.
So this whole thing where like younger siblings get bulk of the attention in this movie, fuck that.
Yeah. Not the case.
Not the case.
But I literally just watched this movie. And I'm not entirely sure what happens because there's no point to any of it. There's no point to any of it.
I don't know what happens next.
At some point, her brother shows up, Stuart.
That's the next note that I have. Yeah. I have Julie has cord stuck around her neck. Molly's brother, quote unquote, Stuart, arrives and stays with them.
It's because I'm sure there's like 10 minutes in between that, but nothing important happens.
Yeah.
It's just like bits.
And he's played by who?
He is played by an actor whose name I can't
pretty remember. Reputable, though, right? Like, today he is. Let me check. He's been in some stuff.
Elias Koteas?
What? He's in other
stuff. Yeah, Elias Koteas. He's in the Thin Red Line, which is... So we'll be seeing him again. Because that's another movie we're covering. You know what he was in?
What?
He was in the TV show I work on.
Chicago PD?
Yeah, he was on Chicago PD for 4 seasons.
Jeff, did you work on Chicago PD?
I do work on Chicago PD.
Wow. What do you do on Chicago PD?
I'm a production assistant.
Wow. What's that like?
It's great.
Cool.
It's a good time.
Good to hear you're getting work, man.
You know that. Never mind.
Well, you know, our audience doesn't know.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
He was not on the show when I've been working on it.
Do you talk to the actors?
What?
Do you talk to the actors?
I have.
How is that?
It's fine.
Are they cool
people? Normal people.
Yeah.
It's not a good... yeah. Yeah, they're normal people.
Cool.
But he was in it for 4 seasons.
Yeah.
He's been around in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
He was in the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
So it's at this point when I started noticing, like, again... Molly and James immediately start working. He is flying private jets now. It's a pilot, and Molly goes back to her accounting job, and Julie immediately gets raised by a babysitter. Mm. And this is where we get the Roseanne Barr crying.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scenes. That's your impression. Here's my impression.
Mommy, why are you leaving me?
Literally, if that was excruciating to our audience, that's how excruciating it was in the fucking movie. It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. Like, at least Bruce Willis. Did Bruce Willis ever, like, wah like that?
He does it every now and again.
But he does it well enough to where I don't notice it.
I mean, Roseanne has a notorious voice, and that's part of it.
Very pingy.
Yes. Like, that's part of her whole bit when she did stand-up and whatnot was her voice.
Yeah.
So they use it to effect in this movie.
Copy.
Stuart sucks.
Stuart sucks.
He brings a gun into the house.
Yep.
He's a deadbeat. He can't get a job.
Cut to, I wrote down, baby ass.
Oh, yeah. We get a really tight close-up of Mikey's ass.
No, it's Julie's ass.
While they're giving her a bath.
Yeah. at this point that
this movie is just thing after thing that I don't want to see.
And Mikey asks about Julie's penis.
Yes.
He's like, because we hear in Bruce Willis' voice, he's like, wait, where's Julie's penis? She doesn't have a penis.
And then the actual baby's voice says, no penis.
No penis.
And
that's when Kirstie Alley and John Travolta are like, do you want to tell him?
Yeah, but they're starting to fight at this point.
They are starting to fight.
They're starting to fight because he doesn't have like a great job. And he's like, why do you let your brother stay around here? But I get like raked over the coals for everything I do.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I taught him about the potty. You can teach him about
the penis.
Penises. And so she pulls up a magazine.
And she's like, see, like Julie, like mommy, doesn't have a penis.
Yeah, and she opens
the
book.
She doesn't say vagina.
Yes.
She does not tell Mikey about vaginas at this point. But, they just say no penis and penis.
Yes. But she opens it up, and who do we see? It is a cameo from the one and only director Staying Alive, Sylvester Stallone. Huge picture of him in the magazine. And she points at him, and she's like, penis. And Mikey's like, penis. And they flip the page, and it's some
actress.
It's an Olympian. I think it's an Olympic person.
An Olympic person.
Or a dancer.
No penis.
And he's like, no penis. They flip to the third page, and it's George H.W. Bush. And they look at each other, and...
what does he say?
I think she says, not sure. Oh, no, tough call.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis is like, tough call. I'm like, what is the joke with this?
Tough call, George H.W. Bush, he may or may not have a penis.
Is the implication that the movie is trying to stay apolitical by being somewhat political? Or is it just that Kirstie Alley's like, I don't know if he's a man or a woman. I don't know what the joke. I mean,
I think it was a political joke.
You can tell
what
the joke is there.
Yeah.
But it, like, sure it's a political, it's almost joke, like an anti-joke.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny, though.
Yeah.
That they're kind of roasting H.W.
Yeah.
But they put Mikey into... After this, the next thing I can think of is they put Mikey into Baby Jim.
Baby Jim.
Yeah, with Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they bring him in, and it just like cuts this shot of Gottfried going, all right, everybody, we're going to dance. And he's like just this over-enthused dance. Like,
isn't that how he is in like everything?
Yes. Gilbert Gottfried's literally, his humor is just him saying normal and sexual things, but in his voice, and it becomes funny. He could just read the dictionary and just be like, all right, the aardvark is a queen. And I'm like, this is comedy gold.
Oh, the 90s.
But that's the next thing I can think of that happens in this movie.
So I do know, like, don't they fight soon afterwards, yeah, about something. And that's when John Travolta leaves.
Yeah, and Travolta leaves.
He walks out.
And she's like, why don't you leave? He's like, maybe I will. And he leaves. And they have, like, split custody of the kids while they're fighting.
Do they ever... They don't really address... They don't say the words divorce.
No.
They're just separated.
There is a part where she's like, have you looked at the thing I wanted to discuss with you? And I think that's implying that, like, they had discussed divorce, but they never say it.
Mm.
But they don't. They don't get divorced.
They don't get divorced. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Mikey thinks that Julie's the reason. And so he gets mad at her.
Yeah, Mike. We also miss that Mikey has like another baby friend.
Oh,
in
yeah,
this movie,
voiced by Damon Wayans.
Yeah, sort of supporting side baby, yeah, character who
his name is Ed,
and he tries to teach him like how to potty train.
Yeah,
like he's like, yeah,
and he's like yeah, the potty
eats your pee, yeah, and poop.
Yeah,
and they're like, what? He's like, yeah, yeah, the bathroom eats your pee and poop, which leads us to another scene.
Yeah, and that night, after like Trolls has left, Mikey like wanders out. He's like, all right, I'm going to the bathroom. And he walks in. He's like, all right. And he just looks at the toilet.
Normal,
he's like,
it's a normal toilet.
But then it turns into a fucking monster.
Voiced by
Mel Brooks.
And he's like, hey, little boy, let me eat your pee and poop. And it like, the lid, yeah, is like going up
all
and
right,
down.
Kids.
And it's spewing blue liquid.
I got poo and I need a poo. Let me eat it.
I want to eat your
That's
poo.
That's a bad Mel Brooks. I know.
But, yeah. And then he runs away and, yeah, pees his pants.
Yes.
He's not potty trained.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next thing I wrote... Oh, wait. We have flashback scenes. I forgot about flashback scenes.
We don't have a flashback scene.
There's... So.
Oh, yeah. There's like a clips montage of,
yeah,
like the first movie.
There's a clips... Because she... Isn't it with Molly where she's sad about Travolta?
Yeah.
And it's
she's thinking about their
him.
Past.
Yeah.
Also, Travolta's gotten a new job as a pilot at this point.
I already said that a while ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she got him a job, and he's not happy about it.
At this point, we're just throwing out things that happened in this movie.
And
I don't know.
You could rearrange any two scenes of this movie.
It doesn't matter. Like, I'm just going to throw this plot point out. I'm pretty sure it's earlier in the movie, but, like, John Travolta takes the kids out for a movie and an ice cream.
Yeah.
And he... I love the bit. This was, like, actually a good bit. And I really like
where he,
like,
finds ways to get in the movie
for
free.
He finds ways to get in the movie theater.
He takes the baby's shoe off and he's like, my daughter left her shoe in there.
And Bruce Willis is like, oh, he's not going to do the my kid left a shoe in there trick, is he? Yeah. And then he does it. It's like, hey, my kid left a shoe in there. Can I get in? And he's like, works every time.
And then he walks up with an empty popcorn thing. He's like, hey, my kids dropped their popcorn. Can you help us? And he has them both cry.
Yeah.
So that the guy just gives them the free popcorn to go away.
I thought that was a decent bit.
It's a good bit.
It's a good bit.
You know what this scene really did for me, though?
What?
They are there to see. It's a choice between Total Recall or a Betty Boop cartoon.
Yeah.
Very odd choices for kids. You would naturally just take them to see the Betty Boop cartoon. The thing this scene did for me, though, is it made me wish I was watching Total Recall, because that's a great movie.
It is a good movie. Did you end up watching it after this?
I did not. Yeah. But I really want... I just got, like, this 4K OLED TV, and I have Total Recall on 4K.
Jeff, you mentioned this to me 4 times before
this TV.
The recording.
I'm really excited about this TV.
Jeff, are you really excited about this TV?
I'm very excited. But I have Total Recall on 4K, and I really want to watch it and, like, melt my eyeballs with that movie.
Wait, on your new 4K TV?
Yeah. I want to watch Total Recall.
You got a new 4K TV?
I did.
That's really cool.
Really good TV.
Did you play Red Dead Redemption on their 4K TV?
I did. It looks beautiful.
Yeah. You know what you need to do?
What?
Watch Planet Earth.
I could melt my eyeballs with
get
that. Yeah.
Really stoned.
No, I put Spider-Verse on.
Oh, heaven to Betsy.
Good Lord. was that nice?
No, that was really nice. Yeah. I liked that a lot.
But I wish I was watching Total Recall instead of this movie.
I wish I was watching Total Recall right now rather than talking about watching this movie.
But Travolta's, he flies, and then, you know, they're still fighting, and they go.
Julie learns how to walk.
And Molly's at the baby gym, and all the kids won't listen to Gilbert Gottfried. He's like, all right, everyone, form up! And none of them will do it. And then Travolta comes in and dances and sings Elvis with them. They'll follow him.
Oh, yeah. That was
kids love him.
I was just thinking, like, oh, this is a nice little Amy Heckerling. Like, hey, John, you can dance to this, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. It's like, all right, do that. Let's roll camera. And he just dances. And it's like, this is a very useful way of, this is a very good use of John Travolta's talents in a movie. Just, like, make him dance.
Yeah. And then it ends and he grabs Mikey and he's like, and passed by Molly. He's like, talk to you later.
You think that's what, like, Quentin Tarantino was watching this movie and he saw that scene. It's like, I need to find a spot where he can dance in my movie.
I mean, I don't think he watched this and said that.
No, I think he did watch this movie and said
that. I'm
pretty
sure Tarantino was just like, yeah, John Travolta can dance and used to be in good movies. Why don't I do those things?
I think he was watching Loki's Talking too.
That would be extremely funny if he was.
Like, Quentin, what was your inspiration for the John Travolta Uma Thurman dance? Well, you see, sir, I was watching Look Who's Talking to the other day, and I realized John Travolta still had the dance moves.
He still had it in him.
Yep.
At this point in my notes, I wrote, this movie has no plot, and I stopped taking notes.
I wrote down, Julie walked, John Travolta dances at daycare, Mikey gets potty trained.
Yes, he succeeds.
He succeeds at getting potty trained. And then I wrote down, short movie, blew right by.
Yeah.
I still have more notes after that, because then that's when this is the end of the movie.
Yeah, Travolta's and Molly are fighting again.
They're fighting again.
And he's like, I have to go fly the plane. She's like, but there's a storm. He's like, I'm going to fly the plane anyway. It's my job.
Well, I think he said something like, they haven't canceled the flight.
Yeah.
Which is, like, very true. Like, you know, for pilots, it's like, by the way, if you ever are deciding, like, if you're trying to figure out if your flight is going to be delayed or not, somebody told me this, where it's like, if you're flying with United, chances are they're going to take their chances.
Oh, good thing I don't fly with
United. Well, versus with, like, Southwest or Delta, if it, like, rains, storms, or whatever, it's like, chances are they're going to get delayed or canceled.
Yeah.
Because I was at Atlanta one time flying back, and I remember I was coming off of a gig, and, like, the AD was like, so, like, I heard there's a store coming. It's like, yeah, I'm kind of worried it's going to get delayed. And he was like, well, who are you flying with? It's like, United. I'm like, nah, they'll take off. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, United will take their chances. But he's
goes to the airport, and then Molly is just like, I can't let him die.
Because
this movie gets really dramatic in the last like 5 minutes.
It is the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. And so she rushes off and leaves the kids with Stuart.
Because she tries calling the airplane attendant person.
Yeah, like the, I guess she calls
who's
them.
Being very reasonable with
yes,
her.
And
she's
like,
not.
And he's like, I don't know how to get
in contact. Can you get my husband? And he's like, who is he? It's like, it's James Barack.
And he's like, he's on the tarmac.
It's like, he's on the tarmac. It's like, well, I need to see him. It's like, I literally can't do that for you, ma'am. It's like, well, I'm just going to go there myself. And then she leaves.
Yeah.
So then she drives to the airport. What is happening while this is happening? So she leaves the kids with fucking Stuart.
Yes. With you.
With me.
Yeah. And then Stuart's just hanging out. He's making dinner. And then a burglar breaks into the apartment.
A burglar breaks.
Stuart pulls his gun on him.
You know how we do this sometimes, Jeff? Where we'll make up hilarious endings that didn't actually happen? Folks, this actually happened.
Yeah, this movie with 5 minutes left, no plot. A burglar breaks in. Stuart fights with the man.
He pulls out a gun. It's not loaded.
They fly out a window onto like
because he chases him.
Yeah.
Like he didn't steal anything.
They're on like the fire escape and like it's a rain-soaked fight. It's oddly dramatic.
Yeah, like again, why did he have to chase him?
At the same time, he left a towel on the oven and on the stovetop, and it bursts into flame,
catches on fire,
with the baby still inside,
with Molly or with Julie and
so
Mikey.
So we have
still
like a Return of the Jedi like three pronged ending where there's Molly racing to the airport to rescue James from the storm.
There's Stuart who's chasing the burglar
fighting
down
the burglar
street.
Down the
and then
fire
there's
escape.
Mikey and Julie
in a flaming apartment,
flaming apocalypse.
Yeah.
It's at this point that Julie succumbs to carbon monoxide poisoning, and Mikey does get out, but he has like third-degree burns all over his body and swears vengeance against Batman.
Yes.
He becomes Two-Face. Yes, Mikey becomes Harvey Two-Face.
Isn't it just really funny that this villain named Two-Face? Anyway, but like everyone's like, Two-Face, man. I'm like, this is the goofiest fucking name.
Hey,
I love
Gordon,
it.
What was that name you guys had me?
Had for me down at MCU. Two-Face, Harvey, Two-Face.
No, no, no. We got to save her. It's like, oh, Harvey, I don't know. It's like, say it!
But yeah. Two-Face. Two-Face, funny name. But Molly, rushing to the airport, she gets onto the plane. He's like, I need to take off. It's my job. He's like, you wanted me to get a job? Here I am doing it. Why are you so mad?
And then Molly is just like, no, there's a storm.
You can't die.
Like, and it's like, you can't die. The storm's coming through. It's going to be bad. It's like, they haven't canceled the flight.
And then the flight gets canceled and like the problems are solved.
Literally, like he gets a call on the tarmac. He's like, hey, according to all flights, we have canceled all flights because of the storm. And they're like, oh, okay.
And they make out and because apparently they're reconciled over this because he saw that she does love him and she realized she loves him or something like that. But they make out and they take a cab back to their apartment. And he's like, who'd you leave the kids with? And he's like, Stuart.
He's like,
what?
Stuart!
So they rush home.
That's what normal people respond when
they rush back and they find Stuart in a brawl in the middle of the street with the burglar.
And you know what happens? John Travolta punches him once.
Yeah, he runs over and punches the guy in the face and he's out for the count. Yep. You look up at the apartment, it's on fire.
James Baracchio apparently was a boxer in his old day because he just sucker punched this guy. Yeah.
And then we're up in the apartment and Mikey's like, I do love you, Julia. I need to save your life. And he pushes the baby out. Into the elevator, and they take the elevator.
And they're fine.
Yeah, and John Travolta and Kirstie Alley run into the building, and the babies come out of the elevator.
And then John Travolta runs into the apartment.
Yeah, into the inferno.
Fiery abyss.
Grabs a fire extinguisher and puts the flame out.
Yep.
It's very quick. This is a very dramatic conclusion that has an undramatic ending where everything just kind of gets solved very quickly.
Yep. I just wrote down that my last note was Mikey and Julie bond at the end.
Yes.
There's a scene where they're like, I don't know, this is like in the summertime, and like Julie and Mikey have like a bonding moment. It's like...
Yeah.
You're going to be my little sister, and I'm going to be a good brother, and I'm going to take care of you. And then they walk off into the sunset.
And then there's a freeze frame, and the movie ends. But the end of the movie is that the parents reconcile, the kids reconcile as well. Stuart finds a girl. It's like the babysitter.
Yeah, he does find a girl.
It's like Kirstie Alley's friend.
Yeah, from the beginning of the movie.
John Travolta is better with Kirstie Alley's parents now because he has a job. Everything gets really tied up in like a 2-minute montage.
Yep.
Not even a montage, just the scene.
Yep.
Where it's all like, oh yeah, everything's solved now.
And that's the movie.
That's the movie. That's Look Who's Talking To.
We're at 53 minutes.
I mean, we're not done yet. You're always like, well, we're not in an hour yet. And I'm like, the episode's not done.
Okay, the episode's not done.
We still have to talk about the aftermath of this movie.
Okay, let's talk about the aftermath of
this movie.
This
movie just has no plot. The first movie was a success, both critically and commercially. This one does not have the critical success of the first one.
No.
It has a 13% Rotten Tomatoes.
It's
only based on 15 reviews.
Rightfully deserved, though. I would say I would put this at 15%.
I would put this at like maybe like 40 or 50. It's like not
really.
It's not a good movie. It's like eight. If it was longer,
I thought it was it's a total waste of my time.
If it was longer, I would be mad. But it's like 75 minutes in and out, and I can't like be too mad. It's not long enough or bad enough for me to be mad about it.
Mm-hmm. I would say 20%, yeah. Maybe.
It received mostly negative reviews. It made $47 million at the box office, so only like half of what the first one made. Let me confirm the exact numbers of the first one.
Made $47 million?
Yeah, the first one made... Okay, the first one made $297 million.
What was the budget?
The first one had a budget of like $7.5 million.
And made
about $300 million.
And then what was the budget of the second movie?
Not list the budget of this one, but it made 47. So huge drop off from the first one.
Yeah, yeah. And you know,
however, still a success for its budget range.
Yeah, and which means
they made a third one. They did make a third one of these called Look Who's Talking Now. We will be talking about it in the coming weeks.
Is Roseanne Bruce Willis all in that one?
They're
too?
Not. Travolta and Kirstie Alley come back. The babies do not have inner monologues in that one. Because their Scientology, like, I guess got repressed or some shit like that. Amy Heckling does not direct the third one. She is not contractually obligated for the third one like she was this one.
And she got the fuck out of Dodge.
Yeah, she got out of there and I believe made Clueless.
Oh, good for her.
So she found success immediately after. I mean, she had had success prior to this, not to say that. But, you know, she made Look Who's Talking 2. And then immediately follows up with Clueless.
Damn.
Which is huge success.
Yeah.
So she actually gets out of this really well. Unlike Travolta, who sucked into a third one that we have to cover.
Yeah, we do have to cover that one.
But yeah, this movie, failure critically, a success at the box office, though not compared to the first one.
Yeah.
It's like a $250 million drop off, which is... bad.
That's pretty bad.
But they still made enough to justify a low budget third movie.
That is, and it has dogs in it.
It's about dogs talking.
It's a dog movie, yes. Which is like watch any other dog talking movie you can find.
Yes,
there's plenty of okay. Homeward Bound exists. It's a brilliant movie.
It's fine. It's good.
Shut the fuck up.
It's a good movie.
I will sucker punch you across this table.
Michael J. Fox is good as Shadow in that. Or no, he's Chance.
Yeah, he's Chance. Put some respect on my name.
This movie got nominated for 2 Razzies. Worst Supporting Actress for Roseanne. And Worst Supporting Actor for Gilbert Gottfried, which I'm mad about because he's the best performance in this movie.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah. When he's just in there with the baby. The only part of this movie that I genuinely found funny.
I did not.
I'm not going to say it's a good performance, but it's the only part of this that's genuinely funny.
I didn't think that was genuinely funny, though.
Because it's Gilbert Godfrey just yelling shit, and that's naturally funny.
I don't think so. I think our comedy is just different.
No, you just have wrong opinions.
Toy Story 4 fucking rules.
I never said it didn't.
You kind of trash talked it.
A little bit.
Jeff is a charlatan.
Here's something fun about this movie, though.
A fiend.
So, Baby Mikey's friend Ed, who's voiced by Damon Wayans,
yeah,
was voiced by Richard Pryor originally in trailers for this, but he was in too poor of health to finish the performance.
Because he died shortly after this movie, right? Didn't he die in 98?
Let me find out when Richard Pryor passed. He died in 2005, so it was like 15 years old. But he was struggling for
he
a little bit.
He was old, though.
Yeah.
He died old.
He died 65.
Well, that's not that
so
old.
So he was only in his 40s or 50s, but he was just not doing well health-wise at the time, so he couldn't finish this.
Okay.
So Damon Wayans kind of came in last minute to finish this off.
Yeah.
The plane in this movie that Travolta flies is actually Travolta's own plane.
Of course it is.
The Learjet.
Before the fact or after the fact?
Before the fact. Like, he was into flying in the 80s.
And they just, like, used his plane?
Yeah, I guess, like, why rent a plane when the lead actor can just give you one for scale?
That's kind of... What?
Yeah.
I still haven't gotten over, like, John Travolta's, like, flying fascination yet.
He loves it. He wrote a book about it.
Really?
Which we're going to cover on this podcast.
What's it called?
What's
the book called where he loves...
I don't know. I'm going to read it and give a book report on... I have 2 book reports to write for this podcast.
What name them? I'll read them with you.
The Moment by Moment book.
Okay, nope, not that one. I'm not gonna do that
one. Travolta's
Airplane book.
Yeah. See, we're only covering movies. We're not covering TV or books, but we are going to do two bonus episodes.
Yeah.
Covering the moment by moment book. And
good luck with that. I'm not reading that fucking book.
I'm going to read it.
And what am I going to do?
Listen to me talk about it. I'm going to see if there's any insights the movie did not reveal for us.
While you're looking that up, you know what's one thing we haven't talked about yet?
What?
The hair.
Cue hair music, I suppose.
Cool. All right. So that was the hair music. So the hair. Nothing special.
Oh, his book is called Propeller One-Way Night Coach.
Into the hair segment, Jeff.
Yeah, well,
the music has played. We're not out of the hair segment yet.
His book is called Propeller One-Way Night Coach, A Fable for All Ages by John Travolta.
Okay, I'll pick it up in bookstores near me. All right, so the hair ranking. Nothing special about this movie. It's the exact same hair as Look Who's Talking, the first one. So I would say the repetitive nature of the hair drops it even lower, though.
Ooh.
Because it's the exact same ass hair, and there's nothing special about it. So I think when we talked about Chains of Gold, I put it in between Blowout and Two of a Kind.
I'm getting it up.
He's getting it up.
I have low reception in this room.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Stop.
Sorry.
We literally just lost so many audience members right then.
No, we didn't. I'm sure they love it.
All right, so the first one's between Two of a Kind and The Dumbwaiter. So you just want to match it with the first one?
Yeah, put it below Two of a Kind, above Basements.
Wait.
Below Look Who's Talking and above Basements.
Okay.
Did I say Two of a Kind?
Yeah.
Yeah, I meant, yeah, put it above Basements, below Look Who's Talking.
Yeah, it's just the same hair from the first one.
Yeah.
So that's the hair report?
That's the hair report.
Cool.
All right.
Do you have anything else you want to... I mean, anything that we didn't cover in this, we probably covered in the first one or will cover in the third movie.
It got old real fast.
Yeah. I'm optimistic. It seems like we're going to have a fun guest for the third one who genuinely liked these movies growing up.
Who?
As a friend of mine. I don't want to say it just in case they're unable to, because they might not be able to.
Will you tell me when we stop recording?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I've already told you.
They liked these movies?
Yeah, they genuinely like these movies.
I don't know who you are, Jeff Sweeney's friend, but I will welcome you in my home.
But it will be... It should hopefully be fun.
It'll be a sparkly debate.
But we have a few movies to cover before we get to Look Who's Talking Now.
Yeah, because there's a little gap between this one and the third one, right?
There's like a three-year gap.
So that makes me think, that means they waited a while before, saying, okay, we need a third one of these. Which makes me think, why?
Yeah, they took some time off.
Interesting. Maybe they find a new director.
Studio just had some money probably lying around. Let's make one of those.
They had to find a new director. They had to find new voice actors, you know.
But... next week, we're not talking about that. We are talking about the movie Eyes of an Angel. An unwatchable movie. I don't mean that as in bad unwatchable. I mean, we've covered some movies on this podcast that are very hard to watch.
Yes.
That I've had to order DVDs of off eBay. This is one that I had to order a VHS. And immediately after we record this episode, you folks are listening to, Stuart and I are going to go watch Eyes of an Angel on VHS.
Because your boy owns a VCR player.
He does.
I have some vintage VHS tapes.
But here's the fun thing. Even if you didn't, it would be cheaper to order a VCR and the VHS of Eyes of an Angel than to buy a DVD of Eyes of an Angel.
How much did Eyes of an Angel cost in DVD?
It's $200 to buy.
Why the fuck did it cost $200?
It's they only made one printing of them. In the early 2000s.
And now you own a print VHS copy of Eyes of an Angel.
Which cost me $8.
I mean, let's just acknowledge the fact that whoever John Travolta's publicist is...
Really hidden some of these movies.
Yeah. That is impressive.
I'm not
even mad about it.
The reason... we're talking about the 80s because it's important to the concept of our show. But they really don't want people talking about the 80s. They successfully kind of erased
10
years of John Travolta's career.
Yeah.
And reframed him in the 90s as success in the 70s, And then, you know, just continued to have his success in Pulp Fiction and Primary Colors and all that.
You remember him from Saturday Night Fever, Grease,
Pulp Fiction.
It's like, whoa.
Face Off. And it's like, whoa, what like, happened
wait,
in between
wait,
there?
It's like, well, there's like a 14-year gap there.
Yeah, it's like, oh, nothing happened.
Nah, it's fine. It's totally fine.
It's like that bit in, I can't remember what TV show it was, but like they're like the German History Museum. It like jumps from 1930 to 1946.
You're like, wait a minute.
What happened there? Nothing.
Nothing happened there.
But yeah, that's John Travolta's career. There's just 14 years missing in terms of the public consciousness.
Is it really 14 years?
14 years is just gone from the public consciousness.
Because
Blowout comes out in 1980. Pulp Fiction's 94.
They really wiped out 14.
They really erased.
Do you think 14. He remembers what happens in those 14 years?
Oh, I'm sure he does. I mean, he met his wife on The Experts.
He did meet his wife
on The Experts. Or his recently passed wife, which is sad.
It was very sad.
But he met her on The Experts, so he definitely probably like looked back at this period not fondly.
Super
in terms
fondly.
Of he doesn't look back on it fondly career wise, but I'm sure he looks back on it personally wise. He was in his 20s, the prime age.
Yeah,
he danced with Princess Diana.
He did.
Met his wife. You know, it was successful personally for him, even if it wasn't career-wise.
Right.
Got to do a play.
Yeah, with Robert Altman.
Robert Altman, which we covered. Yeah, that's Travolta's 80s. We're on our way out of them. It's Eyes of an Angel, Boris and Natasha, Look Who's Talking Now, and then Pulp Fiction and his
resurgence in
the 90s with independent and blockbuster cinema.
I'm looking forward to it because... Yeah. This has taken a toll, Jeff Sweeney. Talking about all these really bad movies with you, great as it may be, but I'm ready to talk passionately about a good movie. Remember our Saturday Night Fever episode?
You say literally every one of our recent episodes ended with you saying, remember X episode where we were
where young we were and happy, young and happy, unemployed.
Yeah.
Good times.
Bad times at the El Royale.
So that's the episode, folks.
This movie I haven't seen. Yeah, that's the episode. We hope you enjoyed. Thank you, folks, for sticking with us. You can check in next week for Eyes of an Angel, a movie you cannot watch, so we will be summarizing it a little better.
Yeah.
Just because we know that no one will have watched it.
Yeah.
But make sure to rate, review, subscribe on every platform you're listening to this podcast on. As a reminder, we are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. You can find us at TravoltingPod on Twitter or Instagram for updates and fun stuff. Pop into our Reddit at r/Travolting. Email any comments or questions to travoltingpodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter at Jeff W. Sweeney.
You can find me on Instagram at StuartElmore95.
Yeah, special thanks to Rebecca Johnson for our graphic design and Van Bodegum Smith for our theme music.
Love you,
as
Michael.
Always, they rule. They do amazing stuff.
When are we getting the new thing?
I'll talk to you after this recording.
Okay.
But yeah, this music that you guys are being led off with right now. Have a great week. Talk to you next time.
See you, folks.